Hey, folks, Damian Mason coming at you. Before we hop into another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture, I want to tell you about Pattern Ag. Pattern Ag is a company that has pioneered predictive soil analytics. You know, we always treated diseases and pests after they were already in the field, when they were already causing us a problem. But what if you can do this proactively through predictive soil analytics? Pattern has a technology that through their technology, you can say, oh, here's the likelihood that I'm going to have soybean cyst nematode. Here is the prediction on how bad of a risk I face for sudden death syndrome or corn rootworm and a whole bunch of other diseases and pests. When you know what your risk factor is, you can more efficiently and proactively treat for the disease. You can do this by going to pattern.ag and figuring out what your risk factors are through predictive analytics. That's right. Go to www.pattern.ag and then get a hold of your Pattern Ag representative to help you do predictive analytics on your farming operation. Hey there, thanks for being with us today on The Business of Agriculture. Got a great program for you today, talking to my favorite Canadian. Okay, maybe not my favorite, because I have lots of favorite Canadians, but he's one of my favorite Canadians. His name is Riley Anderson. He is a Manitoba producer. If you don't know where Manitoba is, it means you need to get your world book out or your geography studied up on. It's just above North Dakota. That's where he is. That's where he farms with his family. I met Riley because of my involvement with Extreme Ag. He is a contributor to Extreme Ag. We're talking about Canadian agriculture and particularly the future of Canadian agriculture, which is going to be impacted by various issues such as regulatory environment on the environment coming out of Ottawa. So we're talking about Canadian agriculture. We're also talking about things that are going to impact it. The people in the Western provinces, if you don't know what we're talking about, dear listener, they had the battle with the railroads a couple of years ago. The railroads were not freeing up cars and track space for their product to get to market. Now they're dealing with a regulatory environment coming out of Ottawa that's going to potentially limit what they can produce based on their inputs that they're allowed to use. This is all a big environmental thing that's trickling over to North America from Europe. That's right. If you know anything, you've heard about the Dutch tractor farmer protest. Well, it worked its way across the pond and now it's in Canada. So the next question is, will it eventually migrate to the United States? My assertion is that yes, it will. Why? Because of the government we have in place right now, which leans pretty hard left, as does the government in Ottawa. Governments that lean left tend to be the rapid adopters of all things climate agenda. So we're going to talk about this as it impacts agriculture. We're going to learn about our friend Riley, and we're also going to discuss what happens in the future if we are indeed limited on the amount of fertilizer we can use, the amount of livestock we can have per acre, et cetera, as it relates to emissions and the new buzzword, nitrogen and nitrous oxide. Riley, thanks for being here, buddy.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to unpacking some of this stuff.
Unpacking, that's kind of a corporate term. It's right there with putting things in silos and buckets and stakeholders. Stakeholders are a big corporate word now too. So, yeah. All right, while we're unpacking this, I set the whole agenda because there's a big bunch of things to cover here. And I think it's real. But before we get into the environmental stuff, the regulation stuff, most Americans don't know much about what happens north of the border. I remember when I first met you, you said, yeah, I keep up with you on social media. I said, thanks, Riley. And then I said, now, where are you? You said, Manitoba. That's north of North Dakota. And I said, I am not as dumb as the average American. I can name every province. And then I named every province and I gave them to you in order and geographical. But you are actually only 30 miles from like the U.S. border, right?
Yes, that's correct. I'm 30 miles straight north of Pembina, North Dakota on the Red River.
Pretty good ground. It gets a little cold in the winter. You grow a lot of different stuff there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we get down to pretty cold temps. We'll freeze the ground all the way to 4 feet deep in wintertime in January, February. We grow 5 crops on our farm. There's some other guys that will grow up to 7. So most of what we grow is oil seeds and cereals. And then in the last number of years, we've mixed in corn and soybeans as well.
And we talked about this off camera. Leave the corn and soybeans to the I states so I can charge more cash rent. That's my message to Canada. All right. All right. Canola.
Yeah.
Camelina.
No.
Flax.
I don't, but neighbors do.
oats.
Yes.
Wheat.
Yes.
Corn and soy.
Yeah. And it's spring wheat for flour, not feed wheat.
Okay. spring wheat for flour that goes into all the stuff that humans eat.
Yeah.
Got it. You have, in our Extreme Ag recordings, talked about the diversity of stuff. There's a whole bunch more that happens in the prairie provinces than most people think for. And I've worked in Alberta quite a bit. First off, the growing season is short but long, meaning it's cold until sometime in May. But then when it finally gets warm, your days last like 20 hours because of how far north you are. So you get longer days but shorter season, right?
Exactly. So our frost-free days normally are about 120 we have to grow a crop in, but we have lots of extra sunlight. In June, for the summer solstice, the sun goes down at 10:45 in the evening, and it gets up, comes up at like 4:45 to 5 a.m.
Makes for long days for you too, doesn't it? You got to get those extra dark curtains so you can sleep at night.
Yeah, that time of year, I love those days because I sit in a sprayer all day, every day that time of year.
All right. So Canadian agriculture, what is different about working in Manitoba than if you were, say, south of where you are and you were in North Dakota? What's the difference? Anything?
Government programs are a big one. Your crop insurance program in the States is much more robust than ours is here. And they also have sugar beets right across the line in North Dakota. And that is something that ends at the border. We do not have any government subsidies that prop up sugar beets. So they end right at the U.S.-Canada line.
I think that sugar, I've been told, might be the most protected commodity in the United States of America.
I've heard that as well. I'm not that familiar with sugar because we don't grow it, but yeah, it's a very protectionary. It's kind of like our milk system here.
Yeah. Supply control up there. Speaking of milk up there, when we hear about stuff in Canadian agriculture, if it's got feathers or if it's a milk product, it's got supply control. And speak to that, please.
This is going to be another thing that's a little bit out of my depth. I'm not too familiar with it, but we have a quota system. So you are allowed to milk X number of kgs that you have bought for quota. So you have to buy the right to milk your cows, or you have to buy the right to have your hen lay eggs. And so there's a cost that's associated with that.
Yeah. And I remember I explained this to people. I said, it makes that cow worth 24 grand. And they said, a cow's not worth 24 grand. I said, you're not understanding my point here. You can have all the cows you want and you can go out and milk them. But you know what? You're going to take your milk and go over to the drain and dump it. Unless you have a quota allowed to sell that milk, meaning you can milk all the cows, and produce all the milk you want, but you're going to take a certain number of kilograms to town and get it processed, or as you guys call it, processed. Anyway, so there's no quota system on the stuff you grow. So you're pretty much in direct competition with the entire global agricultural system on the production of canola, soybeans, wheat, corn, oats, and I guess that's it. I named them all, right? What else do you manage that maybe, and also you said crop insurance. So our guys down here, the government pays a significant amount of their insurance premium. So what if you have a disaster? What happens? You don't get insured?
So we have insurance. It's just not nearly as robust as you guys have down there. So we have nothing. Well, I shouldn't say nothing. We have a small check if we don't get a crop seeded or acres planted, where you guys have prevent plant. That's pretty lucrative compared to trying to mud in a crop.
Yep.
Where we will plant through our seeding deadlines just and take no insurance on the crop because the gamble is better off than taking prevent plant here.
Yeah. Almost nobody does that here. In Northern Indiana, where I am, it'd probably be a mix that some people would say, I'm just going to go ahead and put the crop in, even though it's past insurance date. No, I'm just going to go ahead and take prevent plant because, like you said, it's fairly lucrative. So those are some of the differences. What's better about agriculture up in Manitoba than maybe down here where I am in Indiana?
I would say our freedom from the government up until now, where we didn't have a lot of regulation. We could kind of grow what we wanted, and there wasn't a whole lot of steering you towards certain crops. And also just the community here. We're less than, I think in Canada, don't quote me on this number, but we're less than 2% of the population. We're probably, 0.2% of the population. Yeah. So the farming community is very small, and it's a very neat group to be a part of here.
Sure. you have in places like Alberta, they were doing this carbon thing long before anybody even heard of it down here in the United States. And essentially, as my understanding, they went to the energy sector, which there's only two things in Alberta, that's energy and agriculture. And they took money from the energy sector and then gave that money to the farmers and said, if you do this type of farming system, reduce tillage, blah, 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 then we'll give you carbon money. So that was kind of the real precursor to carbon credits, except for it was enforced or even mandated by government. They took money from energy production and gave it to farm people. Is that something you knew about? And is that happening in the other province?
So we knew about it. It was not in any other province, as far as I know. Saskatchewan might have had a little bit of a pilot program, but I don't think it ever got off the ground. And here in Manitoba, there is oil under us, but due to government regulation, we cannot extract it from the soil.
And otherwise you would sell mineral rights and you'd have a winter home down by me in Arizona, right?
Exactly. We actually hardly even own any mineral rights. The government stripped those away years ago from as many farms as they could.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So if I had mineral rights here, I could sell them. I mean, I do have mineral rights. And if I had somebody if I had something underneath my ground, you're saying that you don't hold mineral rights to what's below your acres?
I hold mineral rights on 80 acres out of my whole farm. So that's next to nothing.
Yeah. Your whole farm is thousands of acres, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So answer me this then about the government thing. We're going to talk about the environmental regulatory environment, which doesn't look good to me, but we're also going to talk about trains. Wasn't it 2 years ago, your neighbors and you couldn't get your product moved because the argument was the rail is hauling oil and stuff that they can make more money off of, to which you'd say, well, then why don't just charge more for grain? I never understood the argument. There's a fixed amount they're allowed to charge to haul grain. Why are you not able to haul grain?
So we have two rail lines or rail companies in Western Canada.
Canadian Pacific.
And Canadian Northern, CN, Canadian National, I'm not even sure, CN Rail.
Got it.
Those are the two companies, yeah. And they are federally regulated,
yep.
And they have a revenue cap. So they are only allowed to make so much money, and they have to spend money with upkeep of the track and upkeep of everything in order to stay inside that cap.
So they're essentially a utility. Your railroads up there are ran in a similar manner to, say, the utility that rings electricity down the street in my house, where they work on a cost plus basis, essentially, and are a regulated monopoly.
Exactly. Now, our government has put into place regulations on how much they can charge for grain, because we had this big giant a few years ago called the Canadian Wheat Board, and they owned all the cars, and they were a government-run organization, and they would force the railways to haul our grain. Okay. Since that's been disbanded, it's kind of been the Wild West on who is telling these rail companies what they can and cannot haul. So oil was very lucrative to haul at that time, and the grain cars kept getting pushed to the side because they were trying to hit their revenue targets.
What was the end result of that? I mean, did you have elevators then were stockpiled so they wouldn't take your grain? And then all of a sudden you're trying to figure out where you can store grain. What happened?
Yeah. So we have a lot of on-farm storage here in Canada, Western Canada, especially, versus in the I states where you bring it right off the field to an elevator a lot of times. So what we were having issues is we have forward contracts that were not getting delivered in the time frame that they were supposed to, which put the rail company or the elevators upside down on some contracts and put some farmers upside down on some contracts just because they couldn't get it delivered. And that caused a little bit of a storm from the farmers, and even the rail elevator companies were not happy.
So I know you said you got a lot of storage, but then you can't possibly have enough for 100% of your production, right?
No, we have about enough for 50 to 60% of our production.
Well, what do you do with the rest of your stuff?
We'll make off combine contracts for some of it, and we'll either put it in grain bags or make piles in the field if we can't move it off combine.
And you had to do that 2 years ago?
We did not ourselves. Our elevator kind of saw it coming, and we got a lot of stuff in ahead of when it was supposed to be delivered. And there was some other farmers in the area and other regions that were hit a lot harder than we were. We have this nice thing called the U.S. border where we can ship stuff across the line. And it goes where if you get into northern Saskatchewan and Alberta, the only way they can get it out of the country is through the Port of Vancouver or Prince Rupert. So we have Thunder Bay, which is to the east, which is a port. And then we also have by rail down to Minneapolis, to the Mississippi.
Yeah. So you know what? You're welcome.
Thank you.
As an American, I will say you're welcome, Riley. All right. Riley and I met through Extreme Ag. If you have not checked out the great work that we're doing over there, you should please do so. I'm producing videos for them. I'm going to events for them, doing panel discussions with them, and also producing a thing called Cutting the Curve. And another shorter version of that called, what the hell do we call that? We call that Shortcuts. Anyway, so my encouragement to you is to go and check out all the cool stuff we're doing at Extreme Ag. It's X with no E on the front of it. Extremeag.farm is the website. Seriously, some really good stuff, including discussions with people like Riley about what he's doing there and also product trials. So go check it out, extremeag.farm. Also, something I think is really cool, dear listener, is the Extreme Ag Scholarship. This group, Extreme Ag, is putting their money where their mouth is to plant a legacy for our future. They're going to give away five $3,000 scholarships, $15,000 to five people, $3,000 scholarships. You just got to be pursuing a degree for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree at an accredited agricultural school in the United States of America or even Canada. All right. Speaking of Canada. All right. So we talked about that. Let's talk about the big elephant in the room. You guys are going to get whacked. The Netherlands 2 months ago starts rolling out this whole crazy thing, Riley, where they say we're going to crack down on nitrogen emissions and on methane emissions. And in fact, we're going to make you maybe liquidate livestock. Now, that media hasn't really covered this, but this is all in what I am reading. Most people don't know. The Netherlands is a small country. It's about one third the size of my home state of Indiana. It's got about three times the population. There's 17 million people there in a place that's about one third the size of Indiana, whereas Indiana's only got about 7 or so million people. So lots and lots of people, also lots of agriculture, lots of intensive agriculture. In fact, the Netherlands is the number two by dollars, by value, export ag country in the world. Now, that's pretty big when you figure they're going up against the Brazils and the United States and whatnot, and even the Canadas, which are ag export countries. So the Netherlands, ag is important, but apparently it doesn't trump the ideology. So this ideology of green, and it is an ideology, and if you don't like this and you think I'm getting political, I'm sorry. There's no way to look at this other than it is political organizations and political agenda being pushed onto the ag sector. The European Union has a farm-to-table policy that they have a stated agenda to convert 25% of European Union farmlands to organic by the year 2030. That's 8 years from now. This will reduce agricultural output from the European Union, period. This also is going to boost Brazil. All the stuff that European Union farmers are not allowed to produce because of the new restrictions will get taken up the slack by Brazil, where they'll just go out and plow up more prairie or bulldoze more rainforest. So it's environmental hypocrisy and, again, green ideology being pushed by politicians. But the question, is it just ideology or is it also some profiteering is happening behind the ideology? Usually with every initiative, follow the money. Well, here's the deal. Why am I talking to you about the Netherlands when I got my buddy Riley on the phone right here? Because the same thing then came across the pond to Canada. Ireland is adopting similar stuff. Article in, this is off of Farm Journal's Ag Web from about 5 to 10 days ago. Dutch farmers are protesting a government policy that Canada and Ireland are now proposing is the U.S. next. Riley, the Trudeau administration came out, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and essentially is following suit right down to a T to what they're doing in Europe, saying that they're going to reduce the amount of fertilizer you're allowed to use. Your emissions are going to be contained and controlled. You'll be monitored. I don't know if they talked about forced liquidations. One article I'm reading in the Netherlands says they're going to probably do liquidations of livestock. If you have too many animal units, they decided that you're releasing too much ammonia through cow pee, you're going to be forced to sell off your cows. This is starting to get to where people are saying, wait a minute, you're forcing farms to liquidate? Sounds very, very heavy-handed. I don't know if that's been proposed in Canada. I gave a big backdrop and spent several minutes there. You tell me your perspective from being a Manitoba farmer.
Yeah, so there, it hasn't gone that extreme here yet. I believe our government is using the frog in warm water and turning up the heat slowly versus throwing you right into the boiling water. We've heard rumors about this since 2018 that something was coming, and now they finally have started to put pen to paper, and they're starting to push their agenda a little bit harder and a little bit more forcefully, I'll say. They have not pushed anything on the animal unit side yet. I think that will be further down the road if they can get Canadians to approve this or comply with this. But basically right now we're in the pilot project of seeing how far they can take it. Right now it's a enrollment program that they're rolling out. So basically if we follow the rules, they'll throw money at us. If we don't follow the rules right now, there's no consequences, but I think the consequences will come down the line if they can drum up enough support from urban Canadians and other Canadians.
I agree completely with that. Right now, like the Dutch model, the Dutch government, the Netherlands yeah. government. And by the way, Dutch, Holland, Netherlands, all the same place and people, just for those that aren't up with that. The Dutch government is saying, they're going to throw 25 billion euro. Last time I looked, the euro and a dollar were kind of close in terms of value. So anyway, that's a lot of money. And again, not that very many operations. But again, the dollars off of those operations are pretty significant, or the euros off of those operations are fairly significant. So this becomes a thing of, we're so into the green ideology, we're just going to pay you to be green. But I always look at the sinister side of things. Why? Do you really believe that making this Dutch farm liquidate or get rid of their livestock is going to save the environment? I think that the hardcore greenies do believe that.
Yes.
But if you're Brazil, maybe you're the one that just paid off a Dutch green politician and said, how would you like to have a house in Rio? I mean, and everybody says, oh, baby, you're crazy. Well, these things don't happen just because of ideology. I believe that there's money behind them. Your thoughts?
I would agree with that too. There's obviously money to be made with going green. Otherwise we wouldn't see the big push from it that we do. Yeah. Just like there's money in oil, just like there's money in solar, just like there's money in hydro dams.
Yeah.
Just like there's money in paving roads. Yeah. Somebody someplace is going to make a buck off of it. And I believe that as we have different governments come through, they push their side that will pay them and pay their pockets.
So do you think that this thing that's happening in Canada is going to reduce food output? Because they're talking about limits on the initial thing that I'm reading here says that Canada, for instance, has a $135 billion ag industry. Canada, a country whose ag industry, $135 billion of its 2021 GDP. So $135 billion of your country's economy is attributed to agriculture. The Trudeau administration is unveiling the plan will cut nitrogen emissions 30% by 2030. That's only 8 years from now. So you want to cut nitrogen emissions. So nitrogen seems to me it's the new tobacco. It's the new corn syrup. It's the new evil toxic word. We're not even carbon. Now they threw nitrogen in here. Nitrogen's the new evil word.
Yep. No, it's amazing how if I was to go out and tell people that I have this secret technology that I can pull carbon or pull nitrogen out of the air and produce oxygen that's easier for you to breathe, that'd be a $1 billion idea. Yeah. But when you tell them that it's growing soybean crops on farmland and soybeans and corn, that's all of a sudden an evil thing.
Yeah, right. So yes. So what the ambient air that we breathe, I think, is 78% nitrogen, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So nitrogen's around, most people don't know that. They think the air we breathe is almost all oxygen. It's only like 20% oxygen. But so anyway, this policy, you know, in Europe, they're talking about reducing livestock because of nitrogen emissions through urine, through cow pee. So cow pee has now joined cow farts. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is going to be running around talking cow pee now because nitrogen's the new tobacco.
Yeah.
But my thought on this is I haven't heard about the livestock thing. So is that where you're going with the frog turn up the water concept, that Canada's not going as crazy as the Netherlands? The Netherlands is going to go straight for the jugular, saying we're going to force you to liquidate livestock in Canada. That day is coming.
I'm not here to say that it's coming in Canada. I think it's going to get stopped long before we get there. But I believe that even just on the nitrogen side here in Canada, when they first rolled it out, it was you have to cut your fertilizer rates by 30%. And now they've backwalked it all the way back to, you just have to cut your fertilizer emissions by 30%. And they're saying, well, you can use a product like Pivot Bio or these nitrogen enhancing products like ESN, and that's going to qualify for these government grants and these programs. ESN, unfortunately, does not, because it's made out of single-use plastic and our government is banning single-use plastics. So that is now just as bad as nitrogen.
So, yeah, well, we have to have a new boogeyman. Plastic straws were it keeps moving. Plastic straws, you know, I'm old enough to remember the boogeyman was actually the boogeyman, but now it moved to plastic straws and then carbon and now nitrogen. Here's my thought, though. Right now, it's all being proposed, and it's so convoluted, I get concerned that it becomes an issue for us in agriculture that we can't even interpret it all.
I would agree with that. Right now, our government is about making headlines, and then we'll figure out the details later. Mm-hmm. So a lot of farmers in Western Canada are searching for guidelines and what is proposed, what is the fine print. And it is very difficult to find, if you can even find anything. And well, it seems like it changes as certain farm groups and farmers ask questions. And the government hasn't really thought this through. They're just throwing it against the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, that'd be a similar statement here. We've got about $1 trillion climate package that's being tossed around here. And I'm recording this on August 5th. About $1 trillion climate package is being tossed around, of which some 80 plus billion dollars of the package is to increase the Internal Revenue Service and hire 87,000 more tax agents to go out and hound the private sector and small businesses about their taxes being not dutifully filled out. So that's hardly got anything to do with climate. So I don't know what's in it about agriculture, and it's troubling. Here's the thing. If you were told, hey, you know what, we want to encourage cover crops. Okay, you'd be fine with that. What's that mean? Well, we're going to give you a few dollars an acre to dabble in cover crops. You'd say, all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then it says, also, we're going to limit, you can't put on fertilizer. You know, one thing called for a 30% reduction in fertilizer. Then, as you said, it was fertilizer emissions. What's a fertilizer emission? That means from the manufacturer?
No, that means for the actual, I shouldn't say no. That's another muddy thing. Because the fertilizer industry is paying a carbon tax already here, where us farmers are exempt from it. So I believe it's an attack on the farmer that way, where they're really pushing the 4 R's of nutrient placement, and they're very worried about spreading urea over the top and it gassing off into the atmosphere is one of the things. And then also the other big one that it seems like they're pushing to get rid of is anhydrous ammonia. It's almost impossible for the rail lines to haul it anymore. And there's big attack on that form of nitrogen.
So do you think this is this pure green ideology, or do you see, we can admit that ag does do some harm, way less than we used to. We're using resources more judiciously than we ever have, mostly because it's just smart business, especially with fertilizer prices being elevated. We can admit, you and I, that we've had some boo-boos. We've done some environmental harm, but this seems wrong place. You know, what's the four R's? Right place, right time, right product, right something else.
Now you're going to put me on the spot.
Well, that's what I do here, Riley.
Right place, right time, right product.
Right soil?
Right incorporation or right practice,
maybe?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I can pull it up for you and put it in the notes later.
So what bothers me is this seems like it's the wrong time in the wrong place. We're already being pretty judicious because of economic necessity. So what the hell's going on?
I think that, not to get too political, but this is attack on the West. Our government has not. Okay, I'll get into this a little bit more. So
you're talking about Canada. There's a big divide for the listener that's checking this out for the first time that they don't know. And I've worked in Canada a number of times for, you know, business purposes and whatnot. There's a divide about as big as the Grand Canyon somewhere after Toronto, somewhere after London, Ontario, I think is where this divide begins. It might be there, frankly. Yep. And there's a big chasm. And then there's then the West, except for about 60 miles from the Pacific Ocean into British Columbia. Those people, it's a similar situation with our East and West Coast here in the U.S. But Western ag and energy of Canada has always felt maligned by the leadership in Ottawa.
Yes, no, that's exactly right. Our governments have been decided the last three elections before one vote has been counted in Manitoba. There's enough political power in the East that the West doesn't matter. Yeah. And Justin Trudeau is doing exactly what his father did, and that is trying to cripple the West and put us under his heel. And it happened back in the 70s and the 80s with his dad, and now it's starting to happen again.
Yeah. And so if you make it so that your two economic power products are agriculture and energy, then you're screwed.
Yep, exactly. We have very little legs to stand on here in Western Canada because we can't make decisions for ourselves anymore. And we have a vast land base of agriculture and we have oil. And we create power and sell power to the world hydro. Mm-hmm. So that's our income. And the East has a lot more diversity and they have a lot more people than us. And they've decided that they can tax us and basically transfer money from Western Canada into Eastern Canada.
Where does this end up? It doesn't end up well.
No, I'm hoping for an election that will solve this. Unfortunately, I don't see that coming anytime soon. So the political pundit in me says that this is going to be a long ride ahead of us yet. We're going to have to really strap up our boots.
What about the increasing environmental thing? Again, it adds cost and it reduces output and then it reduces food security and then also economically harms you. So we already talked about, you think it's here in the United States. Do you think we have leadership in Washington, D.C. that wants to harm red states? Is that why this will happen here?
I'm not a U.S. political expert, so that's a little bit out of my water. But I believe that if you can strengthen your home base, you're going to get more money funneled into your campaign when the next election comes. That's probably as politically correct as I can put it.
Okay. food independence and food security issues come to mind, especially with a country like the Netherlands. Netherlands has tremendous economic power. And do you think that they have made a calculated decision that they don't need agriculture? That it'd be better just to force those farms to sell and build more office buildings and residential units and then just truck the food in from Brazil and then tell the Dutch people, oh, but it's better for the environment, even though we know that's an abject lie.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what the plan is. If you look at what happened in Sri Lanka with forcing all their people, all their farmers to go organic and then realizing that actually buying them, subsidizing the nitrogen for them to buy was actually pretty cheap compared to buying all your food on the world stage. That's kind of, I think, the blueprint for what a lot of people want to do. And we see that with the synthetic meats and the Beyond Meats and all of those type of products. They're just trying to make it more lab-based, more store-based.
Is it ideological meets ignorance, or is it worse? Is it ideological gets backed by sinister, and there's evil Bill Gates types behind the scenes that are making money off of it and letting the ideology be the crusaders while the real decision is being made by the puppet master who's pulling the strings and making the money?
I believe that it comes back to money always. Follow the money, and that's what you're going to find.
How jaded are you? You're a young man. You should be still like altruistic and believe in the greatness of humanity. And instead you're saying it always comes back to the money.
If I'll put it this way, if Bill Gates could make money having feeders, he would have cows.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. All right. So on the environmental thing, how are you going to navigate it? And what should our people that are listening to this think?
I would say the biggest thing we can do is learn the document and read the fine print and speak up and say what you don't like about it. Don't just shout from the mountaintops, this is bad. Let's actually get in and research how they're trying to attack us.
Right now we don't know because it's ambiguous as hell.
Exactly. The other thing is, if they are rolling out government programs that involve you turning your books over to them and turning over your application maps to them, be very cautious about that. Mm-hmm. Right now in Canada, they have no clue how much nitrogen is applied on the field scale or the farm scale. So they are just throwing darts at a board with blindfold on. And they're throwing money at us to get us to open everything up. And once they see what we have, then they can start making targeted policy towards hurting us.
Do you see a day that right now we'd have to, as part of, and maybe you make the USDA do it, or what do you call it up there, Food Canada? All of a sudden you have to turn over what your actual applications are and what you're using on every acre and that kind of thing?
There is some of that already with the neonic insecticide.
Yeah.
You basically have to have certified crop advisors sign off before you can use it as a seed treatment. So I can see that in the future we'll have to have a CCA sign off on our fertilizer applications before we're allowed to pick up the product at the retail. I think that's further down the road after they figure out how they want to form their policy.
Are you worried?
Little bit. I think that
it's going to cost you. Are you worried because it's going to cost you money, or because you think it's bad for our industry and for our countries? I could see both being concerned.
It's not going to cost me a dime. I look at what we're doing in agriculture here, and I can improve. I can get better, and it's just going to make me sharpen my pencil. So yeah, it's going to cost me time because I'm going to have to be a little bit more diligent with what I do. I'm going to have to adopt some practices that didn't really pencil out on the income side, but they were a nice idea. Now they'll have to pencil out because there's going to be restrictions. So it's just going to cost me more time. I think until they actually come out and say you have to cut 30% across the board, that's when I'll start to get a little bit more concerned.
Well, that day may be coming, Riley. And I think that if it's as simple as we want to be more judicious with inputs, we're kind of already doing that. So I see this being unnecessary ultimately. And then I see a lot of credit taking going on. But like from a political standpoint we did this. No, we were already doing it. But here's the thing. The money behind it. We do live in a transactional government. Both of our countries, let's face it, the governments at some point become transactional. So who's behind this, behind the greens?
I think it's for self-gain, either publicity or income-wise. I don't know. Here in Canada, I have a theory that we need to make our prime minister's position a $10 million a year job salary. so that we can attract somebody that actually wants to run a country instead of make a bunch of money for himself on the way out.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. All right, closing thoughts. Give it to me, Riley, on this environmentalism coming to the farm. You said it's not going to cost you a dime. Is that because the government's going to give you enough payment to offset it? Or is it because you think that it'll force you to just keep hunkering down?
It's just going to force me to hunker down. I'm not a big fan of paperwork, so I'm going to do as minimal paperwork as I can. So that will mean that I'm not going to enroll in their program. I believe that it'll actually maybe cost me a little bit because I'm going to do a better job of soil testing. I'm going to shrink my zones down. I'm going to tissue test more often just because I'm going to have to figure out what my plant needs when I need it. And it's just going to force me to become a better farmer at the end of the day.
Now that's good, except that now it almost sounds like this is a good thing. And then everybody can go to Ottawa and say, see, we forced Riley to become better at what he does. What about the person that says, I'm already doing all this stuff, but they keep removing inputs for me and now it's costing me money?
So I would fall into that category already, is I am doing that stuff. I think that if you don't look at it as a way to improve, you're never going to get better. You're just going to be extinct eventually. And we need to go and fight Ottawa and say, hey, we are doing a good job already. We already have a pile of forest in Western Canada. We already are net negative for carbon emissions in Western Canada. Mm. We need to have our farm groups stand up for us as farmers. And we need farmers to go to Ottawa that actually can bend the ear of our politicians rather than just scream and stamp your feet and say, I'm not going to follow your policy because you are wearing a red suit instead of a blue suit or vice versa.
His name is Riley Anderson. If you want to hear more from him, go and check out stuff we're doing at extremeag.farm. I give you a little different angle on it than him, but it's okay that he and I disagree because after all, even though I say he's my favorite Canadian, the Canadians know that I'm happy to disagree with him. I think there's a little bit more danger in this. I think there's a danger in food security for the Western European countries that are essentially just going to offshore their environmental problems and they're going to make them much worse. Western Europe has the right climatological and the right efficiencies built in to be efficient producers of food. And instead, they're going to, out of green ideology or, again, profiteer-based ideology, offshore that to Brazil, which we know does not have a stellar environmental record when it comes to food production. So I'm going to take a little different angle than Riley. He says this ultimately it's going to be okay and it's going to make him dial it in. I think he's already dialed in. And unfortunately, I think once regulations begin, I know they never get put back in the bag. So that means you're going to have more than you even probably bargained for, Riley.
The sinister side of me says we export 90% of what we grow. So I'm going to feed Western Europe.
Yeah, so that might be ultimately good for you because let's face it, you only got 40 million people there and you grow a lot of stuff, so you need exports. All right, so that's it for this discussion about Canada and the future and agriculture and policy. For more great stuff, again, check out all my episodes. I've released over 250 of these Business of Agriculture podcasts. It's an audio, it's a video. If you haven't watched any of our stuff, go to my YouTube channel. It's Damian Mason Channel. Just go to YouTube, type in Damian Mason Channel, and there it is. And until next time, if you want to find out where Riley, what he's doing, he's got a Twitter handle that's like, what is it again? Manitoba Corn Farmer?
That's correct. MB Corn Farmer.
MB Corn Farmer. And also check out the cool stuff we're doing over Extreme Ag. Until next time, thanks for being here, my Canadian friend. And now, now we can visit each other. Our borders are somewhat open.
Yes, we finally can. It's awesome.
Got it. Till next time, it's the Business of Agriculture. Well, that concludes another fantastic episode of the Business of Agriculture. This episode was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You know, everybody in agriculture understands the importance of soil health. We also keep an eye on our soil better than we ever did through advanced soil testing. But what if there was a company that provided predictive analytics? Not just checking out nutrients and all the elements that are in there, but also could tell you the degree of risk you face with disease and pest pressure. That's right. Pattern Ag can do that. They actually can tell you, hey, you're going to have a real issue here. You can preemptively, proactively treat for corn rootworm or cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome before the problem actually starts costing you yield. Go to pattern.ag. That's www.pattern.ag to find the nearest rep that can help you start doing better for your soil.